Mike Tomlin any moment now. Bob Pompiani is doing the television side of this, and I'm sure waxing very poetic. This is going to be interesting. We're going to hear Tomlin's thoughts on the quarterback situation. Will he address it in his opening remarks? We shall see. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The George Pickens situation will be addressed in some way, shape, or form. There's no doubt about that. And this is the second year in a row, really the third year in a row, that Tomlin has to address that. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, once the Steelers get tired of a receiver's act, he tends to be out of town. And once that act starts to go bad, man, can you think of anybody that they've brought back from the brink here and made it good again? I don't know. Once these guys start to go south under Tomlin, they keep going that way, has been the experience so far, but it's his job to bring a guy like George Pickens back. But as Max Starks mentioned, you know, this is unacceptable stuff. Lack of effort, putting yourself before the team. And that's a former Steeler who's talking about that. Next up is the Raiders, who don't have a quarterback, a running back, or a receiver. Other than that, they're pretty lethal on offense. We'll see who their quarterback is. Maybe Tomlin thinks it's a competitive advantage not to name his quarterback after prepare for Fields and Wilson. Jerry Dulac reporting that Wilson has been cleared two straight weeks, is ready to go, should be ready to go.
And here's Tomlin.
We'll see.
Good afternoon. As we lean in on a new week, I'll start first with reviewing our last performance like I always do. As I mentioned after the game, man, it was just a really tough, hard-fought, and close contest by two groups. We came up on the short end of it. And from my perspective, particularly as you look back at it, you know, how do you learn and grow from it? The pain that comes with not getting it done. How do we use that as fuel as we lean in on this week? How do we make necessary corrections in certain areas that become repetitive and sometimes two instances is a pattern? I like to use that cliche in coaching. And so it's in that spirit that I analyzed some things in the game, some things that we need to do better or could have done better. We met yesterday afternoon and kind of went over some of those things. One thing that I didn't mention after the game to you all that I thought was significant in terms of looking at it was the explosion play game. I thought they had big plays in game, and we didn't have enough big plays in game. And oftentimes, man, those chunk plays really affect how games unfold from a climate perspective. You could put together drives with less execution when you have big plays. You also obviously can change the field positioning component of circumstance when you have big plays. I thought a big sequence was we had them in third down prior to the first half, and they hit a big play on us for about 48 yards. We got out of that sequence without giving up any points because D-Jack had an interception, but we missed an opportunity to maybe put points on the board prior to the half when we got the ball back because of how much ground we had to cover. I think we were 95-plus yards away by the time we got the ball back. Had we won that third down and not given up that 48-yard play, the end of the first half could have been dramatically different. We had some big plays we had dialed up offensively, for example. Maybe the second or third play of the game, we had Connor leak out of the backfield down near sideline for a really potential score, a big gain. We didn't connect on that. Sometimes we're just not putting them in the very best positions schematically to kind of get those things done on both sides. And so all of us, players and coaches, are going to continue to work. We realize explosion plays don't often define games, but they do kind of shape perspective within games, particularly from a field positioning standpoint. As I mentioned after the game, I thought the turnover game was significant. I thought we were able to keep the score down with some big plays. We blocked a field goal. We recovered a fumble in scoring territory. We had an interception in scoring territory. But those don't necessarily tee you up to score. We had good field position on the one interception that Joey Porter had. We turned that into points, for example. And so I thought the turnover component was big. We didn't produce the points off of turnovers like we normally do, but they kept the score down because of the territory that they were in. I thought that was a positive. I thought the guys played extremely hard. It was a physical game. We had some attrition things happen in game. A lot of young guys and the guys who are usually in more supplementary roles had expanded roles and had an opportunity to participate more. And I think is growth in some of that individually and as a collective, particularly as we push through this thing and we get some of these guys back to health. We're going to have a really strong and game experience group, which is a good thing. Before I lean in on this week's challenge, let's go over somewhat of a laundry list of some injuries that we're dealing with. DeMarvin Leal can be characterized as out as we sit here with a neck injury. Nick Herbig can be characterized as out with a hamstring injury. Patterson could be characterized as out again this week with his ankle injury. Alex Highsmith out with his groin injury. Pruitt doubtful with his knee injury. Jaylen Warren doubtful with his knee injury. A new addition to that list, KZ. KZ rolled his ankle in pregame, was able to function in game, but obviously on the other side of the game, it really swelled, and he's not in a good spot. He could probably be characterized as doubtful as well this week. We have some other bumps and bruises associated with play. We'll manage those at the beginning of the week and expect those guys to pick up in terms of participation as we push through the week. Included in that is Isaac Seumalo, who played in his first game. We'll manage him at the beginning of the week, but no negative consequence for performance there from a health perspective for him. We're in a little bit different place as I stand here today with Russ this week than we have been in recent weeks. Just met with him and the training staff in preparation for tomorrow. Tomorrow will be the first Wednesday that he'll be a scheduled full participant. We'll see where that leads us. First, we'll see if he's able to obviously pull it off and get through the session. And if he does, what does the quality of that work look like, his ability to protect himself, et cetera, some of the conversations that we've been having, but just been having more in a hypothetical way. He's at the point of health now where we can work on a Wednesday without restrictions, and so we'll do so. He'll get reps with the second unit as to not disrupt Justin's preparation, and then we'll see where all of that leads us as we push through the week. Now let me turn our attention toward the Vegas Raiders. Obviously, we're somewhat familiar with them because we played them a year ago, but there's been a lot of turnover, not only in terms of coaching, but some significant players in that short period of time that makes this exploration a different one for us. I'll start first on their defense. Patrick Graham is back as their coordinator. Got a lot of respect for him. Man, he challenges you in a lot of ways, schematically. He's thoughtfully aggressive in a lot of circumstances. He likes to apply pressure. Even when he doesn't apply pressure in terms of number of people, he's got top quality rushmen that really control the climate from a passing standpoint. Max Crosby's a game wrecker. To be quite honest with you, it starts there. You got to minimize his impact on the game, particularly in one-dimensional passing moments. And it's more than just wishing someone good luck in terms of blocking them. You better do some schematic things to minimize him with body position and two people, et cetera. Things that he sees each and every week, though. It's not like I'm rediscovering the wheel here. He sees those type of things every week. And so we better do those things, but also work with extreme urgency in terms of minimizing his impact on the game. And then Christian Wilkins, they picked up in free agency from the Dolphins, man, is somebody that's new to them, that's, really talented. He's got a well-rounded game. He's disruptive in the run. He's disruptive in the interior in terms of passing. Looks like he's really catching his stride over the last 2.5 weeks or so in terms of his disruption, negativity that he's creating in his playmaking. And so it starts there for us, not only the individuals, but the aggressive schematics deployed by Patrick Graham. And then at the second level, you know, just got a lot of respect for Robert Spillane. Had a lot of respect for him when he was here in terms of his approach to business. It's really good to see how his career has taken off in Las Vegas. I think he is their defensive captain. He's a splash playmaker. He made a ridiculous amount of tackles a year ago, but also had plays on the ball in terms of turnovers, 3 or 4 interceptions. He's doing similar things for him this year. He's in all circumstances. He's a really good communicator, doing a really good job for those guys. They got some top quality people on the back end, man, some ball skill corners, a good safety rotation of guys. They play a lot of people, as I mentioned when I was talking about Patrick Graham, schematically, particularly in situational moments, man, his utilization of personnel. He'll go nickel 4-2, nickel 5-1. He'll go dime. He'll put 6 DBs on the field in one-dimensional passing moments. Out of all of those personnel groups, he has a solid complementary package of blitzes, strong side stuff, weak side stuff, zone blitzes, man concepts. He just does a really good job of working to keep coordinators and offensive units off balance with a well-thought-of mix of aggressive football. On the offensive side of the ball, I know they've been rotating quarterbacks some over the first 5 weeks, but I got a lot of respect for Minshew, man, been in stadium with him. I've just always appreciated his moxie and in-game savvy, his ability to extend, his ability to utilize his legs in an effort to make things happen. Just this past Sunday, the first 2 third downs of the game, he converted with his legs on 2 11-yard runs as an example of that. Obviously, they got talented people to distribute the ball to. I don't know the status of Davante Adams, but if I'm talking about eligibles, I better start there. You know, we had our issues with him a year ago. Thankfully, it didn't determine the outcome of the game, but it just speaks to the type of dynamic player he is and the way that he can, you know, explode in a game, not only in terms of volume of catches, but what he does with it after the catch. He's just got a well-rounded football game, route running, hand selection, late hands, combat catching, you name it. He does it all at a really high level. Got a new acquisition in Brock Bowers that requires our attention. Since Devontae has missed some time, you really feel and see an uptick in their utilization of him as a target. He's doing the same things, really, in the NFL that we saw on Georgia tape. I think he leads all tight ends in receptions and yards. His run after is exceptional. His combat catch skills and his ability to come down with the ball in traffic is exceptional. You saw that early last week on that catch and run that produced that, I think, 58-yard touchdown. But they got a lot of guys, man. I've always respected Jacoby Myers and his well-rounded game. Trey Tucker is a jet sweeper, double move guy. He's got really good top end speed. DJ Turner's role has been elevated since Devontae has missed some time. DJ was next door here at Pitt. He's a sturdy body wide out. He's good in traffic. He can oftentimes play inside against linebackers in positions like that because of his sturdy build. I think they even handed him a ball out of the backfield on a run last week as an example of the versatility within his skill set. So we got a lot to deal with, to be prepared for. But more than anything for us, it's about getting back to business. And getting back to business is winning and putting together a plan that allows that to happen, dividing the labor, highlighting the skill sets of the people available to us. Certainly we got some people that are missing this week due to injury, but we don't waste a lot of time focused on that. To be quite honest with you, we focus on the readiness of those that are available and how we divide that labor up. I'm excited about continuing with that strategic process with our staff and then the physical preparation process with some guys tomorrow. Man, it's a big day, maybe for some edge rushers like Ade and Eko, man, who just got here. Maybe one or two of those guys will get an opportunity to elevate and be a component of our plans this week. And so that's exciting, man. It's exciting for them as individuals. It's exciting for a coach, man, when you believe in the development of talent and opportunities that are in this game for capable men. oftentimes I say there's a fine line between being a practice squatter and a pro bowler. And sometimes it's just opportunity. And so we'll lean in on the week with that spirit as we get ready for play. And I'll pause and open it up to you guys for questions.
Mike, you've been pretty good against explosive plays. What was the difference, do you think, on Sunday?
You know, some of it's Dak, to be quite honest with you. He's very good with the ball in terms of seeing the full field and making good decisions and utilizing all his eligibles. But I thought also a component was that we didn't manage communication well enough. I love Acrisure Stadium, man. It is an asset to us. It makes things challenging for opposing offenses, but we respect it also because it makes things challenging from a communication standpoint oftentimes for us as a defense. And I didn't think our communication at times was up to snuff, and I think that was a component of it as well. Sometimes it was just quality playmaking and throws and catches. I thought Dak went down the middle of the field to 9 one time, and I just thought that was an awesome look off and really good throw. And we made the hit almost immediately, and that just speaks to the talents of Dak Prescott. And oftentimes, I certainly want to be reflective and own our component of circumstances, but I'm doing a disservice to the game sometimes if you don't acknowledge the quality skill set and the talents of those that you compete against.
Mike, you mentioned your guys played hard. Did you have any level of concern with George Pickens' effort or with the message that he had on his eye black?
Again, I don't know what messaging you're talking about regarding his eye black. I didn't have any outline issue with his effort. As I mentioned after the game, I think someone asked about a reduction in his total number of snaps. That's just a snap management thing and an effort to be more productive. In today's game, regarding analytics, we do it across a lot of positions, particularly when you look at the totality of a 17-game schedule. I'd imagine Cam Hayward, for example, is playing less snaps than he has. Just trying to grow and trying to get optimum productivity among some individuals and going about the best means of doing so. And so that's probably a reflection of the snap totality of last week.
The message on his eye black said open effing always. It was an expletive written across his nose. He also yanked a Cowboys player down by the face mask after the game was over. Are those behaviors that are concerning or things that you address with him throughout the week?
It's certainly things that I'm open to addressing and will and do. I just don't detail it in settings like this because it's business between he and I in terms of his growth and development as a player and as a man. I just don't think it aids that growth and the development to address it in open settings such as this. Regarding his behavior, I am aware of that. And obviously that has been and will continue to be addressed. I wasn't aware of the messaging. And so, you know, I'm just giving you a knee-jerk response to that.
Has he grown in a way that you expected or thought that you would see him grow, both as a person and a player, since he's been in the building?
He's certainly gotten better, yes.
Mike, what can you do to get more quality opportunities for him to make plays?
You know, I think it's all of us. You know, I think when you stay on schedule, you position yourself to do that. When you're not highly penalized, you position yourself to do that. Sometimes big plays are born out of the execution of others. You know, if you hit a big play, if we hit that play to Connor down the sideline, maybe we're more fortunate moving forward. You know, we're just going to keep working. We're not going to make a big deal out of it. We feel like we're in the right neighborhood, knocking on the right doors. Sometimes getting the desired result doesn't necessarily mean change. It simply means continued focus. And that's where I am in terms of some of the explosion play discussions.
When the season started, you said you felt that George was absolutely going to handle all the adversity and attention that comes his way positively. Do you see, when you see the face mask, he threw his helmet on the ground so hard it bounced over the bench at one point coming off the field. Is he handling this stuff positively?
Well, in those instances, no, but largely it's been an improvement in those areas, certainly.
How is he as a blocker? Has he improved in that area?
You know, he's a backside one-on-one matchup guy, so oftentimes he's not at the point of attack in the blocking game. Blocking responsibilities within our scheme are more handled by guys like Van Jefferson, to be quite honest with you, if you want a transparent answer.
As far as the sort of load management, for lack of a better phrase, component that you're talking about with him. Some people have, in the wake of your comments post-game, wondered why George, without so many lots of other options at wide receiver. And, like, is it just limited to George and Cam? Will we see that applied to, like, you know, Queen or Watt? These guys get tons of
I just use those guys as examples because they're central components of what we do. And so we're just being smart about how we manage them. But I could extend that conversation to a lot of discussions, to be quite honest with you. We divide the labor up week in and week out between the Landon Roberts and Peyton Wilson, for example, opposite of Patrick Queen. Patrick Queen is our every down green dot, and so he plays just about in all circumstances, and some players do that, but most players, particularly in today's game, that have specialized skill sets, that play positions like receiver, they don't play every down, or like rushman, they don't play every down because you need them in significant moments. You need them at the back half of the season. You need them in the second half of football games and those weighty downs. And so it's really just a 2024 discussion regarding load management.
That's something that was a pretty big departure from the way you used him last year. Was there something you saw that kind of led you to take that action?
I'm just more sensitive to that broader discussion. I'm sure I played Cam more last year than I'm playing him this year, for example.
Has George expressed concern over the lack of snaps, or is he keeping that internal?
No, he has not, because it's been explained to him.
Mike, as you sit here today, with Justin working with the ones tomorrow, are you preparing as he's going to start this weekend, or is there an opportunity for Russ to maybe start on Sunday?
Again, as I've said, until Russ gets to a point where we're comfortable with what we're looking at, he's able to execute all schematics, he's able to put together back-to-back consecutive days and so forth, I just think that's a hypothetical conversation. We're going to continue to push forward with Justin until those things are legitimate, and then we'll make decisions accordingly.
Megan Fitzpatrick, after the game, talked about how, like, you know, with the miscommunications on defense, that maybe you guys could simplify things just so that you guys could play faster or harder. Is that something that he's talked to you guys about and you guys have considered that moving forward?
We consider that each and every week. That's just a component of strategy in today's game. Simplicity means playing fast and sureness, but oftentimes it means predictable. And so it's a delicate balance that we always have. It never really comes into question until you're unsuccessful. And so I generally try to focus my energies on being successful.
Like you said, you want to get more splash plays on offense, but also that you did dial some up and that you weren't able to execute on them. How do you get confidence that they're going to work the next time between now and then?
Because we're professionals, man, and we come to work every day. We'll take the practice field on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We'll work concepts. We'll add to the collection of shots as we go throughout the week, things that might be useful to us. We'll subtract those that we don't have a good feel for or don't feel good about the execution, and we'll roll the ball out and go again.
Justin was less accurate in the last game than he had been over the first four games. Is there something that Dallas was doing or something that just wasn't working for him? How do you kind of explain that?
It's probably a little bit of both. I think each game a performance kind of stands on its own, and there are always some variables that affect performance, whether you're talking about an individual or a collective, certainly.
Mike, you mentioned that Russ is going to take the second team reps. Will that open the door for him to at least be active and serve as the backup, or is there something that's going to answer that question during the week?
I think the fact that he's a full participant is a door that's ajar. But to say any more than that is to speculate, because he's got to get through the day. He's got to show up on Thursday and see where the roads lead us in terms of that. Like in all circumstances, I know I kind of say it in a blanket sort of way, but it legitimately is our approach to business. The limited participation guys, we let the amount of participation and the quality of that participation be our guide in terms of whether or not we include them and how much we include them as we push forward toward game time, and it remains the same at that position.
What did you think of Kyle Allen when he came in fresh there? Without much warm up, and got that.
Not surprised by anything that we get from Kyle Allen, man. He's uniquely positioned as a third quarterback, man. He's uniquely experienced as a third quarterback in a room, and not surprised that he's able to step in and, you know, complete a ball for us. And I think the fact that we, you know, call that concept is reflective of our confidence in him, and his ability to throw it is reflective of his confidence in himself.
Mike, what was your evaluation of the running back group Sunday?
I would like to have controlled the game more in that area, but early on, we weren't winning enough possession downs, and it was a limited possession game, so it probably didn't develop, the run game I'm speaking of, probably didn't develop in the ways that we would like. I saw a foundation there, but the snap totality was not what we desired in an effort to really control the game. Dallas possessed the ball. We didn't win enough third downs. They did, particularly in the second half. And particularly in terms of the second half, the attrition component of the run game got compromised because of those variables. Dallas was converting third downs on offense, and so they were possessing the ball. It created a limited possession game for us. When we got going at such a pace where we weren't able to lean or focus on it in the ways that will allow it to lead the charge from an attrition standpoint.
Is there an element of Russell's game that this offense is missing, maybe, that he can provide if and when he plays when he's healthy?
I think that's somewhat speculative because he hasn't performed here. And so I think that'll get revealed when he gets an opportunity to perform here and be revealed with more clarity the more that he performs here.
Mike, you guys have had now five different offensive lines in five straight games just as far as starters available. What can you guys do to help that group kind of coalesce better or work around them as they're growing?
I'm not displeased with how they're functioning, to be quite honest with you. It may affect us at the beginning of games. I know you guys have asked a lot about the lack of fluidity in some of our starts, and sometimes it's just that. We've had a Rolodex of a lineup. But we won't allow it to be an excuse for us. It won't affect our ability to secure victory over the course of 60 minutes. Oftentimes, it just takes a little while as a collective, a particular collective, to warm up to the work that needs to be done within the stadium. And so that's how it's been. We haven't started with the fluidity that we'd like, but over the course of 60 minutes, it always seems to smooth out and position us to win. And I think that's been the case more recently as well. In the meanwhile, we're getting quality experience from some young guys, and they're proving that they're capable and that they belong. And so that's exciting. As we get guys back, I think we're really going to benefit from some of the challenges that have come with some of the rotations that you mentioned.
Like, you saw Isaiah Loudermilk on the edge at least a little bit in that game. Are you open to doing more of that like you were with Leal, with him, and how have you seen him kind of develop in totality?
We've done that in the past, and we will, obviously, moving forward. He's just a versatile guy. He and Leal are defensive linemen that are participants in special teams. Both guys are on kickoff, and I think that speaks to their unique skill sets and allows him the position flexibility to slide outside and give us some big man presence when lines get short, certainly.
Aside from George, what's your evaluation of the rest of the wide receiver room so far? Some of his snaps are going to have to be delineated to those other guys.
Yeah. I like the contributions of different guys over at different times. There have been moments. Calvin had a big game a couple weeks ago. If you're talking specifically about the passing game, you can't exclude Muth. We've just did long-term contract business with Muth. He's a tight end, but he is a receiver in that. He is a central component of what we do in the passing game. I am comfortable with the contributions of the collective, but I acknowledge who does what week in and week out might not be overly predictable, but I don't necessarily view that as a negative. If they're capable and they're prepared, it makes them a difficult collective to prepare for. Scotty, for example, has had his moments. Van has had his moments. I like the work of all of those guys. We got Brandon in the uniform last week. He made a play or two for us. We'll keep working. They'll keep readying themselves, and I'm sure we'll get the necessary plays that we need from the collective.
Mike, on the play by Landon Roberts, of course, fumble, I know it looked like you mentioned something to Minka before that. Is that something he sees and does on his own, or is that something that you guys coach up?
It's that moment. You're talking about in the goal line circumstance? Yeah, it's in that moment. It's a skill set that he brings, certainly, a feel and timing. But it's also definitely something that you coach in those moments.
Mike, I know you haven't had a general problem with George Pickens' effort, but have you seen him maybe not run routes as hard as you think he should on certain plays, or is that a note that you guys have had off? It's like, hey, need this more out of here. Is that part of the load management discussion?
It's certainly part of the load management discussion.
Mike, when you say Russ needs to be able to protect himself in what fashion, you mean just from a mobility standpoint, that kind of stuff?
Yes.
Mike, does Peyton Wilson have the type of attributes that could lead him out on the outside onto the edge?
No, he does not.
Anyone? All right.
Great. Thanks, guys.
What? So instead of putting this George Pickens fire out, Mike Tomlin pours gasoline on it. He's gonna continue this farce. What, George Pickens is in a timeshare now? Like a Landon Roberts and Peyton Wilson? What? He has no problems with his effort? He actually, in that question, sort of attributed him jogging on routes the other night to load management. Load management with a 23-year-old receiver? George Pickens played less than 60% of the snaps for the first time in his whole career the other night. He was benched, okay? There's tape out there of this. And we're going to continue just to run cover for George Pickens? Maybe now we know once these receivers start to take the wrong road under Tomlin, he never gets them righted. He never does. Once they go down that road, they're gone. That's it. Santonio Holmes, Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, and now George Pickens. This might be the most ridiculous one of all. Making a comparison to how Landon Roberts and Peyton Wilson share time, we're actually going to continue the farce of load management, snap management, with a 23-year-old player? This was a golden opportunity to say what we saw the other day wasn't acceptable. And it seems like Tomlin, because he's been in Pickens' corner since draft day, how other teams stayed away from him, Tomlin has called himself on this issue. He said, I've been combative about it because other teams basically were wrong about these red flags around Pickens. I've never seen this, though, him go to these lengths when something's on tape. It's on tape what he did the other night. Max Starks, former Steeler, who now works for their radio network, for God's sakes, said some guys need to grow up faster than they are after the game the other night. If you want to be a one receiver, act like a one. Don't act like a three in those moments. Don't shrink in the moment you want the ball. Do something about it. Don't sit there and pout about it. I'm going with Max on this one and not Mike. I'm sorry. This is just, I don't know that I've seen him go to this length to continue what I see as a ruse around George Pickens. Everybody sees it. There's tape on it. What he did the other night. And you're talking about, no, this is no problem with his effort. This is about snap management. He's also comparing it to his 37-year-old defensive lineman, Cam Hayward. I'm stunned a little bit right now by that. Being smart about how he manages his snaps. No problem with his effort. The whole world saw it. It's on video. Man, I can't believe it. But again, maybe now we know why when these guys start to go down the wrong road, when they start to go sour, Tomlin doesn't turn them. It keeps going that way. And that's happening in the context of George Pickens going into the final year of his deal next year. Do you want to invest tens of millions in them? Because I will say this for Tomlin and the Steelers, when they reach a point with these receivers where they say, you know what, this is not going to get better, they get rid of them. They do. Every single guy I just mentioned, they traded. That was something else, to just the lengths that he's going to extend this farce. And I realize that Pickens is very important for him and that Pickens has been productive. I get it. It's pro sports. Tomlin did a great job, I think, keeping Antonio Brown productive as long as he did. He at once enabled him and also kept him to where he was being productive on the field. That's kind of a dangerous game to play, though. And like I said, when these guys have turned on Tomlin, and they all have, they never turn back. They were all eventually jettisoned out of town. What do you do with George Pickens? Unbelievably, as I said at the top of the show, that's a bigger story right now than the quarterbacks. It really is. Mike Tomlin, presser reaction brought to you by Verizon, the official 5G network of the Pittsburgh Steelers and Allegiant Community Federal Credit Union. Also brought to you by your local Parmore stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmore store near you now, there will be soon. Tomlin reaction brought to you by Allegiant Community Federal Credit Union, 4.75% on a 7-month CD with just $1,000 new money. Full details at AllegiantFCU.org. You know, if it was just people like me looking at tape from people like Warren Sharp, and I like Warren very much. I think he's very observant on Twitter. Then you could say, well, who else is really saying this about Pickens? Well, players. Ex-players. Max Starks, I respect as much as anybody who's ever walked through that locker room. I just read you what he said. And the other story from this, and you could argue this is the bigger story because of the position, is we're in a different place with Russ than we have been. Scheduled to be a full participant tomorrow. We'll see where that leads us. But to me, the key quote in all that was he's going to rep with the second unit as to not disrupt Justin's preparation. It sounds like, you know, it'd be weird for Fields to start the week on Wednesday and then rip him out of there and put Russell in, you know, suddenly on a Thursday or Friday. It's headed toward Fields again, I think. But we shall see. That's a developing story, and so is Pickens. 412-928-9370. It would also be another thing if Tomlin just said, yeah, he's got to run. To me, the best way to diffuse this is, yeah, obviously. You all saw it. He's not running his routes. He was jogging the other night. Unacceptable. I'm going to sit down and talk with him this week. We need this guy. Instead, you double and triple down on he's Alandon Roberts and Peyton Wilson. He's in a timeshare now. Just like he's just like Cam Hayward now, your 36-year-old defensive lineman. No problem with his effort. Now, this is incredible. I almost felt bad. I wanted to jump in and say, Mike, it's okay. Stop with this. Just say he needs to show more effort. That's all. Mike Tomlin defends George Pickens' effort. Essentially says, although we all know it not to be true, I can't believe that it's going to be true in Vegas, that Pickens is in a timeshare, compared it to Alandon Roberts and Peyton Wilson, compared it to his aging defensive end Cam Hayward. It's just, it's incredible that he didn't just squelch this so easily and say, yeah, we saw some tape that wasn't great on George's effort. We're going to have a talk about that this week, and he'll be ready to go for the race. No, it was more no problem with the effort. Snap management. Didn't know about the F word painted on his face for the game. All of this, everything's good. I don't get it. There's also the quarterback situation. It sounds like Justin Fields is the guy again. Why don't we play Tomlin from the beginning of the news conference, unsolicited, when he said we're in a different place with Russ?
We're in a little bit different place as I stand here today with Russ this week than we have been in recent weeks. Just met with him and the training staff in preparation for tomorrow. Tomorrow will be the first Wednesday that he'll be a scheduled full participant. We'll see where that leads us. First, we'll see if he's able to obviously pull it off and get through the session. And if he does, what does the quality of that work look like, his ability to protect himself, et cetera, some of the conversations that we've been having, but just been having more in a hypothetical way. He's at the point of health now where we can work on a Wednesday without restrictions. And so we'll do so. He'll get reps with the second unit as to not disrupt Justin's preparation. And then we'll see where all of that leads us as we push through the week.
Did I miss something? Was this a broken fibula that he had? What has happened here? He ran into a blocking sled and has a calf injury. He's been medically cleared for two straight weeks. We're monitoring whether he can get through a couple reps with the second team. What's happened here?
And then he was asked, well, what would it take for Wilson to be the starter? Well, we want to see him put back-to-back days together. So you're telling me that now he's a full participant in practice and maybe you don't think he's going to put back-to-back days together? Is that your expectation?
This is also a weird situation, but it sounds like Justin to me getting one more audition, but I would imagine a quick hook, Tomlin alluding to, good participation would likely mean that Russell's the backup here. He didn't say those words exactly, but alluded to it. All right, let's open the lines, Limits, please.
Let's start with Greg in Wexford.
Hello, Greg.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, the thing with Tomlin is he loves to hear himself talk, and his word salad is incredible, but, you know, that's just part of his MO. You know what I'd like to hear someone ask Tomlin? Is, you know what, Mike? Your team's average 18 points a game, 17 last year. Why do you think that's a viable route to a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't. And that's an entirely different question. I appreciate the call, which is more to me framed on Mike. In what ways has this offense improved under Arthur Smith compared to Matt Canada? The answer right now, unfortunately, is about, 1 point and 10 yards per game, something like that. Not much. It looks the same. I got a great question in the mailbag this week, Limits. I haven't been the biggest Pat Narduzzi fan, as you know, from my writings and talking on here. But he's done some very good things. And somebody said, why don't you compare and contrast one coach in town who had a historically horrific offense last year, who basically admitted it by bringing in an entirely new philosophy and letting that guy go to work, completely ditching his beliefs about offensive football and bringing in Cade Bell and saying, go to town. It's yours. Let's play a completely different brand of offensive football. You had the other coach in town who was probably forced to make a change, that's what a lot of people think, at coordinator, and brought in another guy who plays old-school offensive football. One guy, this was bad enough where I think I need to make a sea change here. The other guy said, essentially, yeah, this was pretty bad, but let's bring in another old-school offensive guy and keep running to win.
It's a great point. And also the fact that they brought in Eli Holstein, too, and they committed at the quarterback position like the Steelers did with Fields. But the difference is Cade Bell's offense, they're catering to Eli Holstein and what Eli Holstein does well and what their personnel does well. And that's not what's happening with the Steelers' offense.
Not yet.
It's the status quo.
Not yet. I'm a big Russell Wilson fan. A small Russell Wilson fan. I wanted them to get him. I still want to see what he has, but I thought after the Indy game that Justin Fields had absolutely earned this spot for the time being anyway, and I thought he was going to show out against Dallas and leave no doubt. Well, he left a lot of doubt. He didn't have the worst game I've ever seen. He had a 93 passer rating, a couple touchdown passes, and he led them to what should have been a game-winning drive if it weren't for their crappy defense. But he didn't really play well over the course of the game. Speaking of which, does Tomlin really think that that was like an even game the other night? He said again, that was just a tough, hard-fought, close contest by two. His team was outgained 445 to 226. They were pushed around all night. If you're making a cold analysis of that game as a coach, and I hope him and his coaches did this behind closed doors, the bottom line on that game is we got our asses kicked. We got out-schemed again for the second week on both sides of the ball, second week in a row, and absolutely got railroaded. This should have been a double-digit loss. Thankfully, Prescott threw it to us twice. Thank God for that. But this was not an even game or even close. We got badly outplayed. I hope that's the analysis behind closed doors.
Well, think about it. Dante Jackson had an interception in the end zone. Dak had a fumble forced by TJ Watt inside the red zone. That's two opportunities for points. Whether it's 6, whether it's 14, whatever it might be, the Steelers were flat out dominated at points in that
no
game.
No doubt.
And you know what stood out to me, Joe? Once again, here we go with Tomlin giving the whole soliloquy at the very beginning. He points to the offense. Was there any blame at all given to his defense? during that opening statement?
Except for they got chunk plays and we didn't.
That was it.
Yeah.
Really nothing.
And they did.
When you sell out at the very end of the game, you use your timeouts to make sure everything is set up defensively. Dallas calls a timeout, so you have a chance to reset again. You call a timeout to try to reset again. Dallas changes personnel, and you bail, you lose on what you sold out to try to win on defense.
This idea that the Steelers don't give up explosive pass plays, I think one question was phrased like, oh, that doesn't usually happen to you, but it happened in this game. I'm sorry. Last week, Anthony Richardson opened the first drive of the game with a 42-yard pass and opened the second drive with a 28-yard pass. Last year, and I want all the passionate Minka defenders to hear this stat, because everybody's running cover for him. Oh, they don't throw at him. Teams don't throw in the middle of the field. They don't go down the field. Last year, the Steelers gave up the fourth most passes of 20-plus yards in the NFL. The fourth most, with 63 of them. Now, they were much better on the huge plays, the 40-plus plays. They had the eighth fewest, which is good. I mean, it's not spectacular. It wouldn't indicate that nobody's going down the field. But think about that first number. The fourth most passes of 20-plus yards they gave up last year. That does not indicate to me that people are afraid to go down the field on the Steelers. So please stop that. This year, they've given up the 11th most 20-plus yard pass plays. It's okay. You know, right around the middle of the pack. But again, not indicative of offensive coordinators and coaches and quarterbacks sitting there during the week watching films saying, man, we got to stay away from Minka. I don't know if we want to go down the field. You know, like Artie Smith was afraid in week one because of Jesse Bates to throw the ball down the field. All the evidence would indicate that people are not afraid to go down the field against the Steelers. Let's just put it that way. Last year and this year. And one of these years, and that's become an accurate way to start this sentence, one of these years, Minka might make a turnover play.